All right, so we did not plan anything.
We didn't.
This. So I'm just going to start hitting you with some questions, some rapid fire questions.
Oh, let's do it.
Okay, first question. What is the most embarrassing thing that has ever happened to you while filming TikToks?
The most embarrassing thing that has ever happened while filming a TikTok. That's a tough one because most of my TikToks are embarrassing in themselves.
So the answer
the
is all
is
of
to
them.
Be embarrassing. I would say probably, you know, usually like when I'm filming in the front of the house and people walk by, or when the delivery guy shows up and then I have to run and hide, especially when my clothes are a little small. So I have to like hurry up and run inside. I've fallen a couple times. My in-laws have walked in and looked at me like I'm crazy a few times.
So, oh, yeah, but your in-laws are like, what is happening? Like,
yeah,
what is going on here?
They have grown accustomed to the fact that I'm just a really weird person. And so it's good times.
I love that. And for anyone on Hero Front side of the house, because I think we're both live streaming at this point, this is Janae Sergio, TikTok, Instagram sensation, worldwide phenomenon, some may say. Veteran, author, entrepreneur, and you know, we're gonna see what the audience thinks here. You hear? There's a huge crowd here. Come on, let's give it up for her.
Thank you.
What's funny is none of them can hear that, just us.
Oh, okay.
So they're really confused right now, but that's okay. And so we didn't plan any topics. So I'm going to start with the random question. So we got the weirdest thing you've ever done. Yeah, what's the weirdest thing you've ever done?
On TikTok?
Yeah, or okay. Instagram.
I would say there's a couple, but I would say the weirdest one is this trend where you kind of put your knees down below you and then you put your arms out and it's like a Superman trend. But the way that you position your knees turns out to be just a really big set of cojones. And so that was really embarrassing. And my kids really got on me for that. And they were like, Mom, you're so embarrassing. So that dropping the egg out from below my dress.
I've never seen that one. I got to look that up later.
I did that one with my mother-in-law and she was not happy about it because it made a mess on the floor. The egg splattered everywhere. So just I usually just pick up on the trends and try to do stuff to make people laugh. I think it's fun every once in a while. Just lighten up and have a good time.
Yeah. So I kind of take the same approach where I like to do funny stuff or fun stuff to get people to check out like my core content.
Yes.
Right? Like, do you have a similar approach to that?
Yeah. That's how you kind of draw people in, because if you just talk and you just share your message, a lot of people aren't really going to be drawn in. But if you do something funny or something interesting and you show all of those layers of yourself, you're more likely going to be able to draw in a wider audience. And then those are people that you can really share your message with and hopefully inspire and help.
Yes.
But absolutely. It takes something to draw them in.
It does. It does. And I've learned that just from doing it myself. I've picked up on that. Do your kids give you a hard time? You got kids that one's in high school at least. Is the other one in middle school?
Elementary.
She's in elementary school?
She's a very tall, very tall 10-year-old.
Oh, my God.
she's almost as tall as me already.
Wow. So your kids, you know, they're obviously on their phone a lot, I would assume, right? And they're seeing their mom that's more popular than them.
Say that louder one more time.
Their mom is more popular than them. And how do they handle that? Is that okay with them? Does it rub them the wrong way? Do their friends recognize you?
Oh, yeah. And they're probably in the comments right now saying, I'm not a cool mom like I think I am. They are, like, at first they were kind of embarrassed and they were like, Mom, that's so embarrassing. And they still have those moments where they're like, Mom, my friends are watching. That's embarrassing. So a lot of my daughter's friends follow me. It's fun. It's cute, but they're not like, they just know that's how I am and they like it. Like when I go to my daughter's school, they're like, oh my gosh, there's so-and-so's mom. Like they get all excited. And so every once in a while, they'll kind of come and bring a TikTok to me though and be like, Mom, This is embarrassing. My youngest, I made a TikTok a while back of her saying, how are you TikTok famous and you don't even know how to dance?
Then they're hate. Y'all are a bunch of haters.
They're little haters.
Are y'all listening? Stop hating. Oh my goodness. But no, that's what family's for, right? They have to, they have to knock you down a peg.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And I get the same treatment at home. My wife is like, WTF, dude, shut up. Like, what are you doing? And I'm like, yeah, you're right.
But I think with like personalities like ours, you have to have that kind of family dynamics that includes a lot of joking and wit. So everybody in my family is joking, witty, and we all just display it in a different way. Mm. So it's not like we have an uptight family and then there's just this one black sheep crazy mom. They're all kind of crazy.
Right.
They just have their own way of showing it.
Yes, that is so awesome. So do you ever do like duets with like your kids or get them involved in creative ways? Like, do they appreciate that or are they like, stop bugging me about TikTok?
Yeah. My youngest is all for it. She loves it. I get a little nervous sharing her on my page because of the type of people that sometimes follow, and I don't want them to go and, you know, I just try to protect her a little bit, but she likes to do it, so I'll join her on her TikToks. My oldest is more reserved. She's more into gaming and stuff like that, so she doesn't really, when I have to beg her. To get her in, and my husband too. Like, I can't get him on camera for, you tried. He was like, nope.
Hey, I want to give a shout out to the husband, the behind the scenes, the stage production, the guy who is just the glue keeping this thing together. That's this dude right here.
Chiago.
Bro, have you seen Chiago smile though? Bro, you gotta see, if you have not lived. Until you see Chiago smile, I swear to you, you have to see it. Chiago, you got to bless the internet, man. You've got to come out from behind that camera, get a tripod, invest in a tripod. You can borrow mine. And then that way, you can be in front and center.
He wants nothing to do with it.
Everyone like watching is like, is there anyone there though?
Yeah, right? Like, we're literally just looking off into the abyss, and there's literally no one there. He wants nothing to do with social media. He just behind the scenes, making sure everything's going okay for us, and so we're lucky for that.
Yes, you have the introverts and extroverts typically get married. Well. Yeah, mm-hmm. And then the extroverts and extroverts are typically BFFs.
Yeah, exactly.
So okay, let me think if I can think of any other question. Okay, here's another one for you. I get a lot of haters, you know, I get a lot of haterade, right? Making fun of my hair, you know, telling me I'm a nerd and cringy, and et cetera. I can't imagine like the audience scale that you have, plus you're a female. What is it like with, you know, feel like trying to deflect the haters and the creepy dudes that I know exist that probably follow you? How do you deal with that?
I try to deal with it mostly through humor. The haters, it's crazy because I get a lot of haters because my message is so diverse. Like, I don't have like a niche. I am sharing my message, you know, about my personal story, which is inspiring and brings a lot of people in. But then I also wear clothes that are a little bit revealing, and I do silly TikToks. And so the haters that I get are typically people who follow me because of one of my niche that I have, but then they see the other stuff and they're like, they don't want to accept the whole me. They just want to accept that portion of me. And it's like, you need to change this if you're going to be able to inspire me through this. And so that's where I get a lot of the hate. And I choose to make jokes of it and make light of it, but I'm not going to change. Because the purpose of my message is that we are all perfectly flawed. We're all on our own journey. And this is all of me sharing my whole journey. And if I were to strip away a piece of that, then I would no longer be authentic. Right. And would I really be inspiring people? Right? And so if you're asking me to change, then I'm not going to be able to truly inspire because I'm not being my full self. So that's where I get a lot of hate. I do get also a lot of creepy guys. Typically, I just ignore them or I hope to eventually inspire them as well. So they'll come because they, you know, they like my pictures and they're waiting for me to drop some kind of exclusive content, which is never going to happen. But then they get to hear the message and then they get to be inspired. And so I think that it works out in the end.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. No, I love that. And yeah, I've tried to be someone that I'm not multiple times because, you know, you see someone successful, so you try to be more like them.
Yes.
And then you find out at some point that ain't gonna work.
Yeah, exactly.
It's only when you embrace the good, the bad, and the ugly, your strengths, your weaknesses, and to know that about yourself, to lean into that and be okay with that, that's when you start kicking ass.
Yes. And since this is a leadership conference, it's a good time to kind of leeway into a story that I have that happened recently. And I also share a little bit in my book about over the years, growing as a female leader working for the military. So I was active duty for 8 years, and then I've worked as a civilian subsequently so we're at a total of 22 years now.
Oh, wow.
So over the years of working for the military, there were times as I started to grow into leadership where I felt like I had to morph into, you know, having character traits that my male counterparts had. Mm-hmm. And so being aggressive, being stern, you know, just some of those traits that weren't authentic to me, but I was morphing so that I would get the same respect as my male counterparts. I was even changing the way I dressed because I wanted to be respected the same way that they were.
You even lowered your voice. You're like, hello.
Yes.
My name's Janae.
Yes. I was like, attention. So I was changing, and then what happened was, like,
you started dressing like Hillary Clinton. You got the power suits on.
The worst part, I really didn't, because I was working in a shipyard, so I was wearing like tennis shoes and like zip up hoodies, and here I am a manager wearing tennis shoes to work. And so finally someone pulled me aside and was like, what are you doing? This is not who you really are. You're not coming across as authentic. Be yourself.
They thought they were on like Undercover Boss.
Yeah. I really was like that. I think it was exactly
like,
that.
Who's the new guy in the hoodie and the sunglasses? Like, bro, that we're on Undercover Boss, bro. Like, come on.
It was exactly that. I walk into a room. Nobody knew who I was. I wasn't fully present as a leader. I was just this person who was trying to morph and kind of like evolve into just meshing with the group. I finally decided a couple years ago to truly own who I am. I wear my dresses. I wear my heels. But I be myself. Like, I be myself. I am myself. I'm an empathetic leader. I am somebody who's caring. I'm somebody who puts others before self. So a few weeks ago, I was at, as most of you know, I'm the chief of Air Force Lodging. And so I oversee all 88 Air Force Inns. So a few weeks ago, I was at one of the hotels, and the lodging manager pulls me aside, and she has tears in her eyes. And she says, ma'am, please don't ever change. You're humble and you're a very unique leader, and please never change who you are, and don't morph into what some of these other leaders become when they get a little bit of rank. Right. And it hit me so hard because I was like, oh my gosh.
That lady was like getting emotional about that?
She was emotional.
Oh my goodness.
You know what it was? I think she felt inspired that she could be herself and continue to grow. There may have been something inside of her that made her feel like she was going to have to change. But then seeing me in my position being my authentic self made her realize that, wow, I don't have to change.
Yeah.
I can be myself and display those characteristics that are feminine, a little bit more feminine, and still grow with the Air Force.
Absolutely.
And so it made me realize that I can't morph. I have to be my authentic self because I'm not only being able to be true to who I am as a leader, but I'm inspiring people that are feeling like they might have to change.
Absolutely. No, you're setting the tone, especially at your position, where they're used to either not seeing that person visit, or when they do visit, just caring about like revenue.
Exactly.
You know, they're like, get the people out of my way.
Yeah.
How much money y'all making? You know, they're probably used to something like that. Mm-hmm. And so when you kind of brought that human approach and you spent time with them, you got to know them, that probably blew their mind.
I think it did a little bit, which was actually surprising to me because I'm like, isn't this what all leaders do? Isn't this what we're supposed to do?
Not all leaders. And I'll tell you why, because a lot of them are results focused. Right. And a lot of people get promoted on the results piece although the character's lacking, on paper they're still producing results. And once they get in charge of people, it's a catastrophe.
Yes.
Because they never should have been in charge of people.
Yeah, because they didn't develop the leadership skills that they needed to develop. Right. So those interpersonal skills. I read a book, it's called Leaders Eat Last by Simon Sinek. And that's where he talks about getting into positions of leadership. It's not a privilege, it's a responsibility. You are responsible for the people who work for you, and you're responsible to make sure that they thrive and that they are able to reach their fullest potential. And so if you're in there selfishly, you're probably going to tear those people down if all you care about is results and how you look.
Right. And shout out to Simon Sinek. He came to Whiteman Air Force Base, and I got that book signed.
You're so lucky.
I had breakfast with Simon. We're like this, son.
Oh, man. I'm super jealous. You're so famous.
I'll send you a picture of it and as proof. But no, for real, I do have his autograph.
I'm going to Photoshop myself in.
let's do that. We can make that happen. Absolutely. Yes. No, I think that's beautiful. I think that you are such an awesome person to have in a job like that, because like, you're just a game changer. You're like, you're changing the approach. You're making people feel seen and heard and really humanizing them, right? Which is what they want. You know, some of these people have been working there for decades.
Yes.
And, you know, they might have never met someone like you in that position that even wanted to care to know their name.
That's crazy to me. That's unbelievable. But I know, because I know how it feels to be in that position, right? Where your leader walks by and they don't even know who you are.
Right. Yes. And that is, you start to lose your purpose. But I think one of the things that you instilled in this organization was trust. Mm-hmm. They trusted you. Otherwise, she never would have came to you vulnerable, emotional, and told you what was on her heart and on her mind. If she didn't trust you, she never would have said those things.
Yeah. It meant so much that she felt comfortable to come up and have that conversation with me. And she was so genuine. And it's just, it makes me kind of like, on one hand, like I kind of regret not being myself in past roles and maybe trying to be stern and tough and not focusing on those relationships enough in previous roles, because I feel like it was a missed opportunity for me to be able to be part of their growth. Or maybe I was in the wrong way, which I feel terrible about. But I guess now I get this opportunity on such a grand scale that I take it very seriously. And it's so important to me to be able to get out, meet people, and be a part of their journey. So
yes, absolutely. Is there anything you've learned from doing that role, that job, that you might not have expected when you took that job?
The chief of lodging position. Mm-hmm. Well, I've learned that, so much. You know, I think that there is still a business aspect to it. And so I've learned that there are still going to have to be hard decisions that are made. And like you said, if we make those decisions in a vacuum and we don't include the team or we don't communicate with the team along the way, it's easy for them to be turned off. It's easy for them to lose that trust and to start, you know, making assumptions, and they make their life decisions based on these assumptions that are inaccurate. And so communication is so important. And I'm learning that, you know, in this position, that I need to be proactive in communicating with them, because they're not going to come to me and ask me. So I need to be proactive in making sure that they're getting the information that they need, so they're not making decisions on erroneous information.
Yeah, you're being proactive. You're getting after it. You're meeting them in the middle versus finding out when there's already a fire and half the building's, you know, metaphorically burned down.
Right.
You know, I say metaphorically because we're talking about hotels. I didn't want to say literal fire.
Yeah, please don't.
It's a metaphor. It was a metaphorical fire. So thank you for all that insight, Janae. Seriously, you freaking kick ass.
So do you.
No, I don't. Don't be saying that. This is not my show. This is your show. But no, you. Wow, you. I think that's what I appreciate about you. You know, you're saying you have a lot of haters because of the variety in content. You know, if someone likes your funny stuff, they're like, hey, why are you being serious in this other one?
Yes.
Vice versa. They see a positive message, then they see you acting funny, and they're like, hey, you're not supposed to act funny.
Yeah.
But I think that's your biggest strength.
Thank you.
I think the variety is your biggest strength because it just, I just think, I appreciate all those things. I think you're freaking hilarious. It's creative, the things you do. There's a lot of thought that goes into it.
Yes.
You draw them in with that, and then you hit them with that message, and that you're an author and a speaker and all the things that you went through. And so it's effective. You know what I mean? You're hitting the mark.
Thank you.
So keep doing that.
Yes, sir.
The variety, people. We're human beings. We have variety. Drink Bulkhead Energy. For God's sakes, Bulkhead Energy. Drink it now.
We would show you, but it's holding the phone up. Yeah.
I gotta move this Bang Energy.
We would show you the Bulkhead Energy drink, but it's holding the phone, so we'll have to take a picture with it later.
It's a solid can.
Yeah.
I mean, it's holding that phone up nice. So I don't know what kind of quality aluminum they're working with, but dude, I need some of that.
What does Bulkhead mean?
What does Bulkhead mean?
Yes.
I have no idea.
So this is a Navy quiz. I'm with the Air Force. So it's a Navy quiz. What is Bulkhead? A bulkhead is the wall. So on the ship, these are the bulkheads.
That's what that is?
Yes. So the bulkhead energy has me bouncing off the bulkheads.
I thought it meant like you were cocky, like you had a big head or something. Like you got a bulky head, dude.
If you do, you can't get through the P-ways on the ship.
You hit me with all sorts of just weird terms. I don't know. I don't know how to feel about that.
This is the funny part about working for the Air Force as a sailor, because I sit in meetings with generals and high-ranking civilians, and I say things like, you know, out in the fleet, and they're like, what are you talking about, the fleet? And so then somebody will intervene and be like, we just need to make an announcement that Miss Sergio is from the Navy. So all of the Air Force Inns are now part of a fleet.
You're just going to just rename them all.
Everything is going
Navy terms.
That's it. So if you hear your leader is saying Navy terms, it probably came from me.
Okay. Noted. All right. Got it. Check. Okay. So, okay. Here's another random question for you. What did you learn in the Navy that you still utilize today?
Oh, wow. What did I learn in the Navy that I use today? Chiago, you got to have an answer for that one.
Chiago! Chiago in the house, everybody. What's up, man?
It's probably the quick showers and quick eating. Both of those. I can take a shower. I'll come out of the shower.
What's a shower called on a Navy boat?
I think it's just a shower.
I don't know. I feel like it's called something else, like the head or something. That's a toilet.
That's what the bathroom is. Yeah, I was going to say we take a shower in the head. And so so I come out of the shower very quickly. And my husband's like, what? How did you take a shower that fast? I'm like, because I was in the Navy. And then eating quickly, obviously. So my whole family will be like still eating. And I'm like, come on, we got to go. We got to go. Like, we're done. So another thing that I taught the Air Force about was hot racking. Do you know what that is?
I don't, but I need to know.
Okay, so now that we're doing the community desks, they were talking about sharing desks. And I was like, oh, so we're going to hot rack. And they're like, what are you talking about hot racking? So on a submarine, there's not enough racks, which are beds, for everybody that's on board. And so they have shifts of sleeping in that bed. So
no, they do not.
So they hot rack it. They sleep in the same bed.
So the rack is always hot. There's always a warm body in the rack.
Yes, there's always a warm body in the rack. And so you hot rack. And so if you're sharing a desk with somebody, you're hot racking with them.
You know, I'm public health, so my inner public health is immediately like COVID has taken over all those ships. It just completely annihilated them.
And what do you do?
Because that layout is just not effective with viruses.
This is Air Force. You guys make congressional complaints about not having lobster on the menu.
I've never heard of doing that. I'm so sorry.
I'm joking.
We don't do that. We always have the lobster. Period. Dot.
It's not an issue.
Yeah, we've always. Guys, we always have the lobster.
Yes.
So you learn to shower quickly and eat quickly. Was that from basic training or is that just life on a boat?
Both, because so on a boat, the hot water runs out quickly. The shower is very small, so there's not a lot of space.
Is it ocean water?
There's like a system that processes it, but yes, it is, but it's processed.
Interesting. So there's probably potable water and then there's non-potable water use.
Yes.
I would assume.
Yeah. There's, okay. It's like steamed water. There's a steam process. I'm going to get in trouble for not being able to say this properly.
I'm going to ask you some tough Navy questions.
You are. You're hitting me.
And you're fired. You're so fired now.
So the showers on the ship, there's like 6 or 8 of them, and they face each other. And so there's usually a line of people waiting to get in the shower.
Much?
Very awkward.
Who
so you want to just
that?
Get in and get out. Like, you know. And people like to come in and have conversations. So you're like standing there with your shower bag and you're like, can I just get in? They're like having like full on like conversations in the shower area, or you know.
So they get desensitized to the awkwardness and eventually that goes away.
It's yeah. We're kind of taught very quickly that kind of stuff doesn't matter, you know, with women amongst each other, obviously. And same with the food. The line is long and you just don't have a lot of time. You got to eat and get back to it. So.
Interesting. Okay. And that's something you kept to this day.
To this day.
On the boat, do you get seasick?
I don't get seasick. I think there's been a few times where I did, but I was on a carrier. And so an aircraft carrier, it doesn't get as much motion. But I have a funny story about pretending that I was seasick once when I wasn't.
Let's hear it. We're on Instagram. This is the perfect place for a funny story.
So when I first reported to the ship, the night before we went out and we were partying, and I was hungover on my very first day.
Wait, pause. Where was the party?
It was at a bar downtown, San Diego.
The ship was docked. You guys came on to land, partied there, and then you made it your way back on the ship.
Yes.
Similar to a cruise.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So I made my way back to the ship, but this was my first day on the ship. So I had partied hard the night before, and then I get on the ship and I'm hungover. So I kind of am like feeling nauseous. I'm lightheaded. And I get outside of the chief's office because I have to meet the master chief, and I get outside of his office and they're like, are you okay? And I was like, I'm just a little seasick. The ship wasn't moving. It was like solid as a rock. And they were just like, yeah, okay, sure, you're seasick.
Oh my goodness.
So that didn't work so well. But
and that was your first day?
That was my very first day on board. I should not have gone out with my shipmates that night. I was not prepared to party with sailors.
So I have a funny story about sailors. So I used to be stationed in Guam. That was my first base. And there's a boat that stops there called the Kitty Hawk.
Yes.
And everyone in the Air Force knows that when that Kitty Hawk is there, to not go out that weekend.
Yes.
And I was always warned that. And how I interpreted that was challenge accepted. And I almost got beat up like a dozen times. Thank God I was, 19 and I just was in, you know, cross country. So I could literally run away and they couldn't catch me. But you want to talk about sketchy, bro. You get them Navy dudes off. First of all, they all buy suits. They all buy suits. And they got money and they're fixing to spend that money. And if you're in the way, you're toast. You better get out the way. And if they find out you're Air Force, they're like, we own Guam right now. Like, get out of here. Like, get out of here. And they're all tall, too, for some reason. I mean, I know I'm 5'6", but, man, them Navy dudes are freaking tall, bro. So I was running my tail off. I'm, like, hiding in the bushes from these guys, man, wearing, like, zoot suits. It was the strangest thing.
We party hard. The Navy parties hard.
They really do. They go out fixing to get nuts. Like, that's their plan. Before they're drunk.
Well, you got to think, though, because we're at sea. So, you know, you're at sea for weeks on end, and you're not seeing anything but steel bulkheads.
The bulkhead.
And the ocean, and there's nothing beyond that. It's just pure ocean. And so we get a little stir crazy.
Right.
And so when we pull into port, it's like, gets a little wild.
Yeah, you're on like you're stuck on this floating island.
Yes. All seeing the same faces, wearing the same clothes, eating the same food, and it's not lobster.
What was it?
So the macaroni is typically kind of mushy. A lot of potatoes and eggs and bacon, undercooked bacon.
What do you call where you eat at?
The galley, the mess deck. So the galley is where they prepare the food. The mess decks is where we all eat and hang out.
The mess deck?
Mess decks.
Mess decks.
Yes.
What is your go-to mess dex meal when you're like, yo, son, you hear what they got at the mess dex, dude?
Yeah.
I ain't missing that. Let's go. Like, what was that meal for you?
It's the crab legs. When they bring out the crab legs, I mean, they may have been frozen for a couple decades, but when they bring out those crab legs and the O'Doul's and the steak, like, it was going down. Like, the line was, like, wrapped around. The other thing was, so we call it mid-rats. I don't know if you guys have mid-rats in the Air Force.
Never heard of that.
Okay, so mid-rats is, like, a middle-of-the-night meal because we work 24-7. Do you guys do that in the Air Force, too? Like, work 24? Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we work around the clock on a ship. There's no time to not work. And so mid-rats is, like, a middle-of-the-night meal that they put out. And so what they would put out was chili cheese dogs. Wow. I would stay awake just for the chili cheese dogs. Like, I can
crush some chili cheese dogs.
Seriously.
You know what I'm saying?
Sonic has some good ones.
They do. The foot long. Yes.
I love it. I do too.
But it destroys my body. Like, it's literal toxins in the food.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It's worth it.
Aside from that, solid product. So what about your husband? What does he like to eat? Does he cook the food in the house or not really?
I'm surprised he's not laughing because he is the cook.
You're the cook, my man. Hey, when am I coming over for the barbecue? I'm here till Friday. Let's go.
Yes, come on by. Come on by.
Get in the pool.
What are you doing tonight? We've got a smoked, I don't know what that thing is. There's something big and
some sort smoked. Of roast pork, something or another in there. Some sort of smoked meat of some sort.
Yeah.
You're smoking meat right now? Like at home right now? You're kidding me. What was it?
Brisket.
Wow.
He's the cook. I keep us alive with my food, but the kids come running to the table when he cooks.
You keep them alive.
I keep us alive.
So like a bowl of Captain Crunch.
Like, I mean, I elevate it. Like, there's like, you know, macaroni. No, I can cook. I make like good soups. I make good.
like canned soup?
No.
Like you pour the can into a bowl and put it in for 2.5 minutes with a napkin covering the top?
No, that one I do fresh, all fresh stuff.
Chicken soup.
I make a good chicken soup. I make good like mixed meals, right? Like casseroles and soups and stuff like that. It's crazy because, I didn't grow up, you know, you've read my book. So, you know, I grew up in a tough childhood and my mom was a working mom. And so we ate a lot of like baked potatoes or boxed foods, prepared foods already. And so I never like learned how to cut an onion or mince garlic growing up. And it wasn't until I met my husband that I actually learned all of that. And then I had to learn how to actually cook and make food.
He's like, where's the seasonings? You're like, the what? Salt?
Yeah.
What season? You mean salt? I got pepper.
It really happened. That really happened.
He's like, no, the garlic, dude, the onion powder. You're like, the what?
I won him over with a box of hamburger helper stroganoff.
He's like, Jeanette, get in here. You're like, oh, shit. Yes, honey. Yo, how did you make this?
Yeah.
He's like, what? This is incredible. How did you make this? And that little glove like pops out from Hamburger Helper.
Yeah. I'm all digging the box out of the trash. But I mean, I've grown to be a pretty good cook over the years. I'm not terrible. I season my food now. I tried to hide the box when I met him.
That's adorable. That's adorable. And you guys have been married a while now too, right? Already forgot. I want to say it was
17 years.
Or 18.
It might be 18. Oh, I guess 18.
Going to 18.
Our anniversary?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So 18.
18.
I wasn't going to try to do the math.
No, I'm the same way.
I need my calculator.
So you've been married for 18 years.
Yes.
Wow, 18 years. I've been married for 10 years. You've been married for almost double that. Wow. That, first of all, congrats. You got a beautiful family. You're killing the game. I mean, clearly you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
So congrats to that. That's more than what most can say. What are some life lessons that you've learned as a wife? And like, what lessons have you learned being married to this awesome guy right here? What has he taught you? How has he bettered you?
I think that, you know, putting family first, I've always been very driven and I've always been, you know, because of what I come from, I really wanted to succeed in life. And so there were times where I maybe put my career above my family. So what he does is he kind of reels me back in and reminds me why I'm doing it all. And it is for my daughters and to give them a better life. And so there's balance in our family where I'm more of the risk taker. I'm more of the, you know, let's just go do this. And he manages the finances. He helps with kind of keeping us a little bit more down to earth and stable. And so I think that if I could say a lesson, and especially within marriage, is really just balance, just not, you know, like you said earlier, two extroverts and two risk takers, two people who are not good with money. Those are the kind of things that start to get in the way of the marriage and get you in trouble if you don't have that balance. And but gotcha. With balance, you also need compromise.
Right.
So
yeah, compromise is a huge part of it.
It's huge.
I mean, it comes down to that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, if this is going to work, you know, you got to do this, do more of this and less of that, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And if, I mean, for all people who don't make it, that compromise just didn't happen.
They weren't willing to compromise.
Yeah.
And that comes from a little bit of a selflessness, right? Being willing to you know, go with what somebody else wants or somebody else is recommending, or even just take an intrinsic look at your decision making. And is what I'm, you know, trying to pursue the right thing for our family, and being able to listen when your spouse or your significant other is telling you that it's not, right, and willing to sit down and take a look and really evaluate that. I'm like full speed ahead type A person, and so I need to be reeled in every once in a while.
No, I'm the exact same way. Like, I just go ham sometimes, and yeah, my family's really good about, you know, bringing me back down to earth for a little bit and kind of pausing to smell the flowers. And
yes,
no, I'm right there with you. And I think that's why we're BFFs.
Because, yes, definitely.
Yeah, we're at that same energy, a fire inside, which is what I got tattooed right here.
Yep, exactly.
And my daughter has it too. So watch out, world. We were just talking about that. So I have a daughter. She's 5. She's an incredible little girl. So smart, so driven. She's got the fire inside. How do I, as a parent, keep a great relationship with her so that when she hits 13, she's not like, F you, dad? Like, what can I do now to make sure we're good when she hits that stage? Or is there no avoiding it?
There is avoiding it. So there's kind of a balance. I feel like when it comes to parenting children, you have to get past the point of control and to the point of influence. And in my opinion, it's around the age of 8. So around the age of 8, you're no longer controlling them. You're no longer threatening them. I mean, there is discipline, and there is, you know, taking away their internet if you have to or whatever, but it's just constant like conversations, be an example, and having an open enough relationship where they can share the tough stuff with you. Because there's things that my oldest daughter, my 15-year-old, can share with me that her friends cannot share with their parents. And so she gets that guidance that she's able to take back to her friends and help them through some of their situations because they don't have anyone to talk to. So just not really relying on control as they get into their teen years and relying on being able to influence them and have that relationship, have that constant conversation with them. You know, how was your day? Being able to identify when their energy is off, when things have changed, and not necessarily probing them, but just keep asking, are you sure everything's okay? Because I'm sensing that something's off. And then they'll finally come around to say, okay, yeah, I do need to talk to you. And that's happened to my daughter a few times where she'll say, Mom, I'm so lucky to have you as my best friend. And I'm so lucky that when I'm not myself, you can sense it and you'll actually pull the information out of me so that I can get that guidance from you.
Gotcha. Wow. That was actually really good advice.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I'm going to go back, listen to it again, take some notes. Thank you for sharing that. Random question. Have you ever almost quit social media?
No, because that's what they want.
I know, but like, I've been there where I was like, God, fine. I'm going to quit. I'm deleting this stuff. You know, like I've had those moments. So have you had those moments?
I say no, but there have been times where I felt overwhelmed by it all and I felt like I can't keep up with it. And so I've wanted to maybe take a pause or I start to feel like, are the relationships that I'm making authentic? And is this the direction that I want to take in my life? And there have been times where, and the reason that I wrote the book, where I felt like I wasn't using my social media with the right purpose. I felt like, for example, when I opened Perfectly Flawed, my boutique, I felt like I was becoming more salesy and I wasn't inspiring people in the way that I wanted to. And so I needed to just reevaluate what my social media presence was and then pivot. And I think that's important. So when you start to feel like you want to give up, that means that you're not fulfilling whatever purpose it is that you have. Mm. And you're starting to veer away from that. You need to recenter yourself and think about, what is my purpose? What is it that I want to be of value to my followers with?
Right.
And then fix it. Yes. And that's what I had to do. And that's why I wrote the book. And that's why I'm being more open about my personal story, which is scary to share. But I'm sharing that because I feel like that's what my purpose is to inspire people and to help people.
That's incredible. So I want to write a book one day. Like, there's a lot about me that nobody really knows. There's a lot of really hard times, a few miracles that I've seen. Like, I feel like I have enough content to write a book as well.
Yeah.
And so, like, as anyone who wants to write a book, it's daunting. Like, I feel like it would just start with writing down story after story and what you can remember and then putting it in chronological order. But I don't know. And that, so I want to ask you, like, what is your recommendation to someone who is on the fence about being an author, about their own life? How should they approach writing that book out?
Yeah. I think, first of all, I hope you do, because I think it'll be incredible, and I'll be the first one in line to get one.
Sweet.
Autographed, of course. my advice is start with, again, we're going to go back to Simon Sinek, one of my favorite, but it's start with your why. What message are you trying to get across to the people who are going to read it? Remember, your book is a product for other people. And so start with your why. Remember what that message is. Maybe even write it down and have it posted up next to you. So I kept a picture of my younger self because I was writing it for her. Start with your why. Like you said, get all of the stories, especially if it's a life story that you're sharing. Like you said, get it all written down, because as you're writing it, you'll start to remember more stories that you have suppressed and you haven't worked through. As you're sharing those stories and you're writing them down, you're going to have emotions that you need to process. Process those emotions. Take breaks. Take time to say, okay, you know what? This one was hard. This one was a hard one for me to go through. I need to take a break and really process this emotion. How did this affect me? How did this mold my life? And how did I come through it? And what do I want the reader to get from this story? Or is it even a story I want the reader to read? Right? And then put an outline. And in that outline, you're going to want to kind of, you know, decide what each chapter is going to contain. Is there a life lesson that's going to come out of every chapter? So that's kind of what I did, was every chapter had a little bit of a life lesson. And I included maybe a quote or a Bible verse in there that kind of set the tone of what you were going to read.
Wow.
Have grace with yourself. And give yourself a little bit more than 6 months to write it, because once you start going through those motions, you may need a little bit more time, but then don't draw it out so long that you never finish it. So, I mean, I could give a lot of advice, but because it was a process that I wasn't prepared for before I did it, and it was very emotional, and I wanted to give up at times because it was just becoming too much for me. So just prepare yourself for that.
Yes.
But don't give up.
Okay. Hey, I've already written a few articles, thousands of downloads. People like the articles. I feel like if I just keep writing enough articles,
put them all into a book,
basically take that approach, that eventually there'd be enough content there to then formulate into a book.
Yeah.
And then to release said book, I have to wait till I retire.
Well, I left out work stuff. I did leave out the work stuff for that reason, because there are stories that I could have given from, you know, my career as a federal manager, but I thought, you know, let's wait. So maybe there's a book after I retire on some of those stories.
Right. There's just certain things, that just don't, you know, they're not so well received with like where you're currently at in life. You don't want it to be like misinterpreted as like a reflection of like, you know, who you are now or to that organization. So yeah, there are things you got to think about. It's a risk putting yourself out there. It's a risk. That's why I like the term, which is the folks that got me here, Courageous Leadership Alliance, because you have to be courageous to lead.
Yes.
You have to be vulnerable. No one's asking us to do this. No one's asking us, forcing us to sit down and have this talk, but we're taking that chance in the hope that people enjoy the content and they gain something from it that they can include in their own life. And they get to know you a little bit more. And they get to know me a little bit more. And so like, we're doing that because we love it, but there is always a risk to it, because you never know, you know, which hater is going to see it and try to make a big kerfuffle of the whole thing.
Yeah.
So it's always risky to put yourself out there, but if you love the what you're doing, if you love your message, if your heart's in it, there's really nothing that's going to stop you from doing it.
I agree.
You know what I mean? Like, we may tweak something here and there from feedback from like our mentors that, you know, because even I was in not a good, so good spot, and that would make me put out a little bit more negative stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because I'm an open book and I'm transparent, and sometimes I put too much out there, and then I'll have someone say like, hey, you might want to reword that or delete that video or whatever. And then if it's someone I really value, then I will listen to them and then be like, I might need to take a break because I'm not in the best headspace.
Yes. Yes. You know what I mean? It's interesting because when I was writing my book, that's what was kind of happening. And people, I think on social media were even like, are you okay? Because I was going down like a dark route
as I was writing it. It bleeds over into your creative content. Yeah. It will bleed over. And then the people that keep up with you will notice that.
They do. They do. And they'll start messaging me like, is everything okay? What's going on? Your content has been really dark lately. And usually you're smiling and laughing. And I couldn't get it out of me to be happy and joyful. And so in the times I was trying to, it was very clearly forced. So you're right. Like, as we go through those like ebbs and lows in life, you're going to see that in our content. And as far as leadership is concerned, you're going to also see that with your people. And that actually, one of my favorite messages to share with military leaders is, in your military career, you're going to have people, and I don't remember if I shared this with you in the past on one of your podcasts, but it's one of my favorites. In your military career, you typically have people who work for you for maybe 2 to 3 years. Right? Mm-hmm. And then you move on. There's a lot of rotation. And so you don't know where that person is at in their 20-year career when they come to work for you. And so they could come to work for you and they could be at like the peak of their career and they're doing well and they're a high performer. They could come to you at a time where things in their life are just not working out, or they're just kind of over it and they need a little bit of grace. They need a little bit of downtime so that they can process their situation and then get that pep back in their step.
Right.
And so I feel like in our social media presence, it's the same as in our leadership presence, where, you know, sometimes we just kind of go through lows and people can see it and they'll step in and say, hey, are you okay? Is there anything you need to kind of get you back to the person that we know you can be?
Right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. No, I love that. Giving people grace, giving them that time, because if you just keep
piling on,
then they're never going to get through that. Mm-hmm. And they'll probably eventually just quit.
Yeah. And bad leaders, selfish leaders will actually take advantage of those situations. I don't know if you've seen that in your career, where you'll see somebody who's actually just going through a hard time, and a leader who wants to boast themselves will say, watch how I take care of this person. And I'm going to make sure that they get right. And they'll take advantage of the situation instead of being selfless and saying, okay, I know I'm not going to get 100% from this person right now, but I'm going to work with them. And they'll kind of block them from any added stress that's coming their way. That's kind of what you need to do for somebody who's going through a downtime, instead of just piling on and saying, look at me, I'm taking care of this poor performer, you know?
Right. And I've seen that time and time again. And the ironic thing about that is they're trying to be macho and tough and stern and, you know, hold that person to the flame, when that's the easy thing to do. So in their mind, that's the big thing to do. But in reality, it's a very small thing to do. Mm-hmm. Anyone can act like a jerk and mess with someone when you're their boss. Mm-hmm. Anyone can do that, right?
Yeah.
Because they're paid to be there. They have to be there to make a living. So you could take advantage of that. The harder thing is to actually give a damn.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually the braver thing to do, the more courageous thing to do, not be a jerk and boast about it.
Yeah.
And when I see that, it just...
It's a turnoff. And, you know, I learned this from personal experience in both roles, actually. So I actually have experienced it myself, where I was going through a hard time and the person I worked for was a narcissist and kind of took advantage of that. I didn't write about it in the book, so I won't go too far into detail about that. I needed grace and I didn't get it at that time. But I've also been that leader who didn't give someone grace when they needed it. Mm. It was my first supervisory position, and I had my supervisors who were like, you know, you need to do this, you need to do that. And so that was where I was morphing, where I thought, wow, do I have to be this person? I didn't like it, but that was what I was kind of being told to do. Mm. And the way that I was treating, you know, these employees who were having a hard time was actually compounding the situation, because now they were responding to my treatment and they were becoming paranoid. And so their behaviors were getting worse instead of better. And it wasn't until I reflected and realized that, wow, I should have had grace with them. I should have really sat down and got to know what was going on with them and kind of silenced that noise that was coming from above me and been true to myself, which is someone who cares and really wants to help them. And so I carry that regret and I carry that memory so that I don't do that to anybody ever again.
Yeah. And when you do that, and I think everyone goes through that at least once, mm-hmm. right? You're not fulfilling your role as a leader. All you're doing is taking their BS mm-hmm. and then just
piling it on them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like that's not what you would do.
Yeah.
That's not what you would say. You become like just a vector of what that person, that toxic person is putting out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And they oftentimes, I was talking about this today, they oftentimes find every toxic leader has a scapegoat. Mm-hmm. Every single one of them has someone that they have targeted to pile all the problems onto.
Mm-hmm.
And then no one wants to be that person. So then that person becomes very isolated.
Yes, exactly.
Because everyone's trying to survive.
Yes.
And they're like, shit, I don't want to be like that. So let's
stay away. I'm
going to
distance myself from them. So I'm not. Yes. That's right. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, it's called scapegoating. Mm-hmm. And I just talked about that today with the command chief. It was really awesome.
Oh, that's good that he's aware of it as well.
Oh, yeah. This mm-hmm. guy is phenomenal. But hey, we're coming close to our hour, believe it or not. So our ADD session, we had an ADD session, ADHD. We're all over the place. I literally just asked you random questions this entire time. And you know what, y'all? We killed it. We killed it, y'all. It freaking worked, okay? And you know why?
Always does.
Because I pounded a Bulkhead freaking energy drink to the dome, and it got me so fired up that I was able to make this happen, okay? But I hope you like the questions.
Absolutely. It's always great sitting down with you, so.
Yes.
Free fire anytime.
And by the way, Janae has been on Hero Front not once, not twice, but three times. She's been on here. This is her third time, dude. What?
And I should just be your co-podcaster.
Actually, yeah, that might work. We're going to take over the world. Your husband's like, oh, God, here we go.
He's like, another thing for Janae to take on.
He's just thinking about all the money that you're about to spend on equipment. It's just like, oh, my God. No, Janae, no.
He is too.
He's smiling over there, y'all. Great guy. Love this dude so much. Ever since I seen him in that video when you were on that talk show.
Drew Barrymore show.
It, you know, he stole the show. Drew Barrymore show. I'm watching the clip. This is when I first was introduced to you. And I'm like, what? Why? How is she on the Drew Barrymore show? Like, and it's y'all dancing on stage and acting goofy. And it pans to your husband. And he just smiled. Bro, he stole the show. Bro, I was thinking, why ain't he up there? Bro, get him on the stage. What the? Get him up here.
Everybody was calling me like, I saw Thiago on the show. And I'm like, what about me? How'd I do? They're like, yeah, we're used to seeing you. We can't believe he was on there.
They're like, Thiago killed it, bro. Oh my God. Did you see Thiago? He crushed it, dude. Crushed it. So I guess my last question before I give you the floor to say anything you want to say that we didn't already cover would be, how did you get on the Drew Barrymore show? This is a random question episode. How did you get on that freaking TV show and dance around on stage with Drew Barrymore? How did you pull that? You pull off a lot of stuff.
I do.
Like
in life. Like
you're like, oh, I'm on this news thing tonight. I'm just like, how the... Like, cause I'm in the social media world. So I know that like, that's not easy to like get on TV or to get on the radio or to do a fashion shoot in freaking Colorado. Like you pull off some wild stuff. I am very impressed. So let's just use the Drew Barrymore show as an example. How the hell did you get on that TV show?
They found me.
You're kidding me. You just, everyone just lost hope right there.
Like, I'm sorry, you guys.
I thought you had an answer.
Ready for how they found me?
I'm ready.
Well, take a guess. Which platform do you think they found me on?
I think they use Instagram the most.
They found me on TikTok.
No.
Yep.
Whoever that was, shout out to you. They're probably some young intern that was like, hey, y'all,
they do I have know some you're amazing.
On Instagram, but I'm on TikTok and look who I found and y'all suck at your jobs because I'm 20. And they're like, you're right.
When they emailed me, I was like, it's a lie. I was like, I'm getting scammed. Like, this can't be real. It was real. And so they contacted me. They said they saw one of my viral TikTok videos and they wanted to bring some female veterans on for a makeover. And so I was like, yay, that's exciting. And so we went on board. And then I'm like getting my hair done. And I was like, you know, I'm not going to let you guys do whatever you want because my hair, you know, I mean, like, that's just a big part of me. And they were like, when Chris Appleton tells you to do something with your hair, you do it. And I was like, who is Chris Appleton? Kim Kardashian and J-Lo's hairstylist, like the famous one. And so I was like, oh.
He's like, you're in my world now.
Yeah.
You're in my world. And all the execs are like shaking, like, just listen to him, please.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly what they were saying. They were like, you do not tell Chris out. But you know what? He is the most humble person. He's so, him and Drew are just amazing. What an awesome experience to meet them. As you grow through your social media career, through your career in podcasting, you're going to meet a lot of really big people and people with big followings. And you're going to start to come across people who are not authentic. And it's really hard. Like, it hits me hard when I do, because I'm like, man, I really looked up to you. So that sucks. You know?
That happens?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
so,
yeah.
Like, the whole social media side of them is a character.
Right, right. It's a show. And I'm not, like, there's a lot of them, but there are also a lot who are very authentic. So those are the people I surround myself with. Mm. And that's why when you say these opportunities, like sitting right here, happen, is because I surround myself with authentic people who are genuinely wanting to help one another. And so we all grow together. And I think that's how I keep just getting lucky with some of these things, like with the photo shoots and stuff like that, is because I just have amazing people in my network who are like, oh, I know someone. And then they do the connections. And so I think that's important. It's just never to get so far ahead of yourself to where you start like, oh, what's in it for me? What's in it for me? How am I helping other people? And then in turn, those people will turn around and help you.
That's amazing.
When you're a big podcaster, when you're in Joe Rogan's, you know, seat, you're going to remember me. You're going to be like, I remember Janae because she came on my show when I was first starting up 3 times. And then I'm going to be lucky enough to be on your show. And people are like, how'd you get so lucky? Well, because we built that relationship way back in the day.
I hope that's true. That would be sick because Joe Rogan is the GOAT. And I'll be one person removed from
him. Move over Joe Rogan.
No, I wouldn't say that. Hey, no, I didn't say that. But no, my buddy that I went to high school with.
It's all simmer down.
Cut the live feed. But no, my buddy who I went to high school with, he became a UFC fighter. And he goes by your boy. And he was just on Joe Rogan.
Then
I hit him up and I was like, hey, dude, you were just on Joe Rogan? He's like, yeah, man. I was like, you want to come on here in front? He was like, yeah, dude, let's do it. So I'm one person removed from Joe Rogan after this episode. One person. That's it. One degree of Kevin Bacon away. Is what I'm saying. So it might be possible, but no, I appreciate
Joe Rogan. Get him on your show.
I appreciate your faith in me. I really do, and I feel like that's kind of what you are. You just put faith in people. You show people love. You make them feel special. And you know, sometimes that's all we need to like believe in ourselves and that to get to that next step, to take that chance on ourselves. It just takes someone like you to tell them to believe in them. And so, thank you for doing that. Thank you for being you. And you know I'm proud of you.
Thank you. And we'll talk about that part later.
Yeah, we'll
talk about that. You made me cry. The first time he said, I'm proud of you, he made me cry because it just hit. Like, he just said it in like such a fatherly way that I was like.
You know I'm proud of you. I really am. I'm proud of you.
It's so genuine when you say it. I really mean that. It's very genuine. So thank you.
I appreciate it. But I'm proud of you and your husband here. I want to give shout out to the husband, the behind the scenes. The glue that holds the family together. This episode is dedicated to your husband for being such a kick-ass dude and having a heart and a smile of gold. My God.
Yeah.
If you could just follow me around, I would be so optimistic. I would feel like I could do anything if we could just hang out. So thank you guys for coming out here, spending time with us at AFSA. We're at AFSA, y'all. We're at the Air Force Sergeants Association Conference. It happens once a year. We're in San Antonio right now. All the airmen are here. All the airmen that run the Air Force are here. We're having a blast out here. Janae got to meet a ton of them. So hopefully there'll be some collabs in the near future with some of the friendships that she's going to make here at this conference. And so with that, we're going to end the episode. We just hit an hour. We've been talking for an hour. We did it without any planning whatsoever. And I've already talked to you twice before. So we're like, what do we talk about? I don't know. But we made it work.
We've got a couple more in us.
I think so. Yeah,
not today, so. But soon.
Absolutely. And so, I'll just let you say your parting words to end the episode, whatever that may be. If you want to talk about, you know, something like a product you're passionate about, if you want to talk about a story or whatever that is, what is the final thought for Janae today?
Well, first of all, thank you again for having me here, and what an honor to be here at this event. I did bring some signed copies of Perfectly Flawed book, and in my book, I talk about how you too can be your own hero. So get yourself a copy of that book at perfectlyflawedbook.com.
Hell yeah. The book is incredible. Absolutely incredible. And you brought us copies to hand out. Like, I just did this gift bag thing. My wife talked me into it on a whim, and it has grown. It was an empty bag. Well, first of all, I didn't have a bag. I had Bold Type Graphics make the bag, veteran-owned business at Eglin. She made the bags. They're freaking awesome. They're phenomenal. Black Rifle's like, hey, let me throw you some coffee and shirts. Janae's like, hey, let me throw you some books. Suddenly, the bag is badass now. I want the bag. Like, I didn't make one for me. I want one, but I don't get one. That's okay. We're changing lives out here, y'all. Your book has touched so many people, and the donations that you've made to hand these books out to Hero Front guests is just an incredibly kind thing for you and your husband to do. So thank you so much. And I hope to see you soon, Janae. I don't know. I feel like you're going to be in Florida again, or I'm going to be in Texas or something.
Definitely.
Or I'm going to come to your house and freaking do a cannonball in that pool at the freaking mansion, the freaking Sergio mansion, eating some smoked meats. You know what I'm saying? So that might happen. I don't know. We'll see. But at any rate, thank you guys for watching. Thank you for tuning in. This episode is going to be found on HeroFrontPodcast.com. Or search Hero Front on any music streaming app or YouTube, and you can find all of my content with interviews with kick-ass leaders like Janae here. So with that, we are out. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.